When it comes to running a plugin business, often the part that most people get excited about are the features, right? Getting in and building it and making it and seeing it go out and solve customer problems. But the minute you make your first sale or you have your first download of your product, you've realized that what you are actually creating is not necessarily a plugin business or a product business. You're actually creating a support business, and support becomes so instrumental very, very early on in the life of any product. And in fact, I would argue that it's probably one of the first hires that you'll make as a product business as well, is to actually go out and find somebody to take on the burden of support. I call it a burden. It's not really a burden. It's the opportunity of support. And Gravity Forms is no different. So I've invited Justin, our head of support, and Chris, one of our most senior or experienced support engineers, to come along and chat with me a little bit about this whole idea of support and why it's so important and how we do it at Gravity Forms. Because I think for those who are looking to get into the business of products or working in this WordPress ecosystem, product support is so instrumental. It's a really great place for a lot of companies to start looking. So hopefully this conversation is helpful to you. If not, at least it gives you some insight into the inner workings of how product businesses work and support works, and gives you some insight into our team and how we handle the challenge of supporting a product with hundreds of thousands of users. Well, without any further ado, let's get into it. Welcome to Input. Well, thank you so much, Justin and Chris, for being here today to talk a little bit about support. And I'm curious to know a little bit about you. So, Justin, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then maybe Chris, you go ahead right after.
Hey, thanks for having us, James. I will say that I don't come from a WordPress background. I knew a number of the people here in the early days of Gravity Forms because I worked with them at a previous software company. We were a previous company that did website platforms for marine dealers, etc. But what actually brought me to America was a fun job in the gaming industry. I used to be involved in gaming development on properties like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and things like that. So they dragged me to America with the promise of fun. Then I got serious for a while. But now, you know, I get to have a little bit of both in the WordPress environment. So I've probably been with the team at Rocket Genius for just over a couple of years. I came in originally as a project and process person to get a few things done. And then they brought me over to help get some things and give some representation that the support team needed, especially in the management levels.
I started using Gravity Forms while I was working at a Harley-Davidson dealership. I was creating their website, and I purchased Gravity Forms for the company in the very first month that it was available. I started trying to get support, which at that time was in support forums. And after I started getting a little bit more comfortable, I started helping other customers in the support forums. And for a couple of years, Kevin, one of the founders, tried to get me on board as an employee, and I kept kind of denying it for a couple of years until 2011, which is when I finally accepted the position. And I've been in support ever since.
Well, if there's one truth that I know about any kind of product business, especially in the WordPress ecosystem, it's that when you are launching a product, whether that is a theme or a plugin, you very quickly learn that it is not a plugin business or a theme business, it's a support business. And it becomes very much about how well you are able to guide users as they are learning to use your product, and then from there, how they continue to get value out of it. I'm curious to hear, Justin, maybe a little bit from your perspective as the leader of the support team. What is the philosophy of support at Gravity Forms?
From our perspective in support, speed of service obviously is important, but so is quality of service, in that, you know, once you have a problem, you have enough of a significant enough problem to have to reach out to us and ask for assistance, then in all likelihood, the project you were working on has sort of been stopped. You're on pause. And so how quickly we can respond to that becomes very important to your perception of the quality of the support. And then the second perception that is important for us is the quality of the answer. So people need to be very able to write very clearly. It's a written communication. We're generally communicating in our tickets back and forth in a typed manner. So you've got to be able to communicate clearly. You've got to be able to format your paragraphs, your sentences clearly. So there is a more of an emphasis, I think, here on quality of service we can provide, as opposed to, you know, judging support purely by its metrics in the end. I mean, we will take the extra time necessary to try and killer problem and make sure you don't run into further problems, as opposed to, you know, hold anyone to a major standard of, you know, you must do this many tickets per hour. That's not really the metrics that we take care of.
It's a very probably unique approach than you might experience with some others. Obviously, scaling that approach is a challenge. Chris, can you maybe tell us a little bit about some of the ways that the team is actually working to improve the quality of response? Because I actually agree with you, Justin. I think in my own experience, when I go through a support portal or go through a ticketing system, I always walk away or approach it knowing that the first response is a throwaway response, right? That generally is how it goes. It's somebody whose job it is to respond as quickly as possible. They don't actually solve the problem, but their goal is to make sure that the response, there's a response out within a specific period of time. But what I've noticed about Gravity Forms and our approach to support is that, as you say, we do tend to take that quality approach of trying to actually solve the problem and solve it. And if we can do that quickly, great. But that obviously means a higher level of expertise and experience within our team. So Chris, maybe you can talk a little bit about that and how we approach the team environment and solving problems first go around.
We don't have a level one, level two, level three type support. We're all very skilled in pretty much all the areas. There are some people on the team who are more skilled in specific things, and we will route a ticket to someone who is better at maybe the REST API or maybe integrating with some third-party service. So there is no levels for support. There's people who are better at some things than others. And we will chat in Slack all day long back and forth on tickets. We'll drop things in there. When we notice a trend going on, we will put notes on tickets and we will pass them back and forth that way. And lately, what's been happening is I've been kind of spending a lot of time on some tickets that have been either sitting and needed some extra attention, or that other people have exhausted all the resources and then it just took, they needed another pair of eyes on it so that, you know, someone else would look at it and maybe come up with a different approach to solving the problem.
It's interesting that you say we don't have a tiered approach to support. And for those maybe who are new to the support industry or understanding some of the best practices here, there are different schools of thought and different ways of approaching your support. When you're first getting started, most likely it's just an email address or a contact form. And when you fill that out, it goes to somebody's inbox and they respond as those tickets come in. You very quickly hit a sort of cap of what one person can manage. And then it becomes important to have a shared inbox. And so you have that shared approach where you get multiple people looking at the same influx of questions and comments and queries, and then assigning them to individuals to respond to. And then as you scale that up, you start to develop expertise, as you've mentioned, Chris, and looking at a tier one, which would be that approach that I was mentioning earlier, where you have somebody who just responds to the ticket to make sure that, you know, it's a response. And if there's a quick thing you can do, then you can solve it. That's great. And then that tier two or tier three is you're more experienced or you're more focused and niche type of responder. So it's interesting that with Gravity Forms, our approach is a little bit of a hybrid of that, in that all of the team is skilled and there's cross training that happens as well. Justin, we've just done a major launch at Gravity Forms, probably one of the biggest launches we've had in a few years, which is the launch of 2.5. And I'm really curious to hear from your perspective, you know, leading support, how that goes over with customers and what some of the challenges are that a support team faces as a new feature is launched. And the reason why I want to talk about that is I think, you know, when you have a smaller product with a smaller user base, you might not see it, you know, magnified the same way. But for those people who are in the position of trying to scale up a business in the product space, maybe there's some good insights there. So we've got a user base with hundreds of thousands of users. We've obviously got a lot of technology and a lot of add-ons. And so rolling out a major product update like our 2.5 comes with some big challenges, especially change management. So I'm curious to hear from your perspective how we approach that and what some of the challenges were.
Yeah, I'd say that 2.5 was probably the largest product change during my time with the support team. The thing about launching something new is prior to the actual release, you are taking an educated guess at where you think the pressure is going to be. I'd say one of the things we kind of learned the hard way in the end is that you often tend to focus on new features or, you know, revamped features as where you think the questions are going to come, because that's the things you're trying to document, because we also maintain the user-facing documentation. That's the things you're trying to learn yourself as a support technical engineer, trying to make sure you understand the new feature. I'd say the thing you sort of tend to learn the hard way, and we've learned it more than once, is small changes to existing things will cause a lot more disruption to your customer base than major things introduced, because often their use of a major feature is optional, while the change to something small that, you know, is a change to UI or a fix of a long-standing bug that, you know, people have started to work around, something like that, can catch people a little bit by surprise. So I think that's kind of an area where it doesn't always happen where you think. You will never be able to predict where the pressure will come. And for us, the funny thing is that it comes usually a couple of weeks after the release. You sort of get through the first week after release and you're a little bit on tenterhooks and everything seems to be fine. And the second week goes okay. And you're like, oh, you know what? This has been really successful. Third week three, maybe, maybe week four, where people finally get around to saying, oh, okay, I'm going to click that auto update now. I'm going to, you know, delve into this. You can amortize that a certain degree by the effectiveness of your beta periods or, you know, your release candidate period. But when you're dealing with not just the size of our installation base, but also the sheer breadth of use cases for such a long-standing and, you know, technically competent product like Gravity Forms, you're in a situation whereby you aren't going to be able to predict anything. So something will catch you. You've just got to be ready. You've just got to be on board. You've got to know that the pain is coming. You've got to know that when the pain comes, the thing we tried to do, because it was got ridiculously busy, the thing we tried to do was say, just get through the ticket you're on. Don't worry about the queue. You can't deal with that, and you don't need that extra stress in your day. Just deal with the ticket you're on, and then we'll keep communicating regularly to try and work out what are we seeing as common threads. What can we all learn by this? Talk a bit more often, get together a bit more often, have a really close rapport during those times with your product development team. Indeed, our product development team and even our senior founders stepped in and helped during that time to get, you know, in front of the customer and experience the voice of the customer directly. So and a few little lessons there, I think, that we've probably learned more than once, but 2.5, you know, was ready to teach us those lessons all over again.
Chris, I'm curious from your perspective, because one of the things that we do within the support ecosystem at Gravity Forms is we have, as you mentioned, the ticketing system, but we also have a community forum. How have you seen the community play a role in how we do support at Gravity Forms?
Well, that's interesting. As I mentioned earlier, support used to be only in the community forums back in 2009, 10, and 11, and that's where I was most active before I was an employee. But what started happening when the queue sizes started getting larger, people were reaching out on all other social networks that they could. So they would visit our community forums, they would visit Facebook, they would visit Twitter, and they would try and get someone however they could get them. And in some cases, if we had already seen this problem and we knew the answer and the fix was available, we would just direct them to the download. But if this was a new problem, I tried to direct them to support so that we could kind of aggregate all of the tickets of the same problem, and then the product team would have enough information to go off of to kind of implement a fix and then make that available. So I kind of pulled in all those contact points. I kind of kept tabs on it and made sure that good information was getting out there. People were not saying, you know, Gravity Forms 2.5 is terrible, don't upgrade, things like that. So I would kind of direct the conversation there, but also redirect people to open a support ticket when it was something new that we hadn't seen, so that we could kind of see how many people were affected by that same issue.
Justin, I'm curious to talk a little bit maybe more about the tooling that we use at Gravity Forms, because there are a lot of products out there. There's Intercom, Zendesk, Help Scout, and a variety of other tools. We at Gravity Forms are using Help Scout. Can you maybe take a bit of a strategic view for those who might be looking to do something in this space? I've got a couple questions. One, when is the right time to transition from, say, like a single email inbox to a tool like Help Scout. What's the value add for a ticketing system like Help Scout, whether it's Help Scout or Zendesk or anything? What do you think the value add is to a team that's maybe smaller than ours getting going in using tooling like that?
Yeah, the value steps in. And, you know, to be fair, like all tools, you'll find things you love about them and things that, you know, drive you a bit crazy. But, you know, hopefully the love outweighs the crazy. The thing, once you step up to having more than one or two employees, if you can't coordinate directly, especially such as in our case, where all employees are remote in the support team, if you can't coordinate efficiently through other channels, such as the power of Slack or other direct messaging systems, then you're probably in a situation whereby stepping up to a more community-based ticketing system is an improvement for you. For us, if you look back, it used to be that the forums were considered the font of all knowledge. And one of the benefits there was that it was publicly searchable. But the other thing was we couldn't control the quality of the responses on there. You had to hope that someone looking for an old answer would come across the right answer on the forum, because forums, you know, in general have, you know, answers from all, you know, good, bad, and indifferent sort of thing, because everyone tends to answer. So one of the big benefits now for us at this time, we've spent, you know, so many number of years on Help Scout, is that there is a massive amount, a wealth of background knowledge there. So one of the ways that it can help people as they school up as new support technicians is they have the ability to search there, go through tags, look for similar tags, even be directed there by some of our documentation that says, here's a good example of this type of problem. And then they can benefit from previous people's not only experience in solving the problem, but how they phrase their responses. There's so much there. And additionally, you step up to a system like this, you have the ability to then start reviewing the quality of your output. You start have direct representation of what people are saying to the customers, you know, which is a difficult thing to get if you're on a phone system. And it's a very difficult thing to get if you know, someone's just sending direct emails. So I think oversight, I think to a certain degree, organization, although, you know, our Help Scout organization is still fairly light. We do split things up and we do tag fairly consistently, but it's not too bureaucratic, I'd like to think. Chris may argue with me there, but it's only trying to be enough to try and say, hopefully you can find what you need to find in a reasonably quick manner and benefit from what you find there.
So Chris, in terms of the one-to-one response methodology, something that Justin said sort of tweak this in my mind is really about the voice and tone that you use in terms of how you speak to customers and how you help them navigate through problems. Now, you're going to get all manner of person regardless. You know, you'll have happy people and not so happy people in support. But if there's one thing that has to be consistent, it's the way that you respond. It's the way that you solve problems. And so I'm curious to hear from you after, you know, a decade of Gravity Forms. What is our voice or our tone? How do we approach writing responses and defusing those types of situations? And if you've got any tips or tricks for people who are getting into it maybe for the first time.
Sure. I actually wrote a tone guide for support a year ago or so maybe that we referred to. And it has some tips in there about language to use and things like that. But what I learned actually working at the Harley-Davidson dealership was the person standing in front of you, even though they're yelling at you, they're not necessarily yelling at you because of something that you broke, but maybe something happened on the way to the dealership, or maybe something else happened at home before they left the house. And I think the same thing all the time when support tickets come in, something else may be going wrong, they may not be making money, there may be other stresses at home or at work, and they can kind of vent because we're faceless. You know, you can just kind of drop it into a ticket. So the first thing is to not entertain most of those things and just kind of let it go over your head. Don't engage with that. And then read the ticket once to get a general idea, and then read it again to actually see what their issue is, and then start crafting a response, and then go back and save your draft, and then review your response, and even sometimes have another support person take a look at it and say, do I sound too harsh? Do I sound empathetic enough? Did I cover all of his points? Because sometimes you'll have five issues in a ticket and you maybe glossed over something important. So to not enrage them more, we try and, you know, have a double check on that and make sure that we covered all the bases.
I think that's great. And it speaks as well to, really a philosophy we have, I think, at Rocket Genius around really trying to solve customer problems. That's the core of what our product is solving problems. And so it would make sense that our support would also mirror that in how we approach it. I love that empathizing as well with where people are at. And you're absolutely right. We don't always know what's going on. And we have to remember too, sometimes we bring our own baggage into it as well. Maybe we're not having a great day and figuring out how to leave all that at the door to the office or you know, get out of the headspace of emotionally responding and getting into it is kind of fun.
I think there is an important self-care piece to being a support engineer. You're in a situation whereby you have to be able to reset. You may be at the end of your day. You may have, the last customer may have been, you know, excessively dogmatic or abusive, etc. You have to be able to reset mentally when you step to the next one. So you need a method, whatever method happens to work for you. You know, if it's part of your, you know, emotional makeup, that's no problem for you, that suits you well. If you need to get up and take the dog for a walk, that's also fine. But one of those things that you need to know that the next person is a new person. You may have just finished a ticket that was hard work, but the next person wants to be the center of your attention, and you've got to be able to give them that. And you've got to be able to give them that without, you know, bringing any of the previous emotion with you. And that's, it's not easy. It's not easy for any of us. I mean, I think we struggle with this as employers, as employees, as parents. You know, how do you not take your baggage into, you know, your home life sort of thing? But I think those are skill sets that you start to really work on, and, you know, you get to someone who has a, you know, a decade of experience like Chris, that, you know, they become very important skills and, you know, hard skill to teach, but a valuable skill once you start to realize the importance.
Well, it's interesting because I think probably, you know, looking at the landscape of technology, support is likely the team that's the first to be distributed in a company. It's the first team where you're going to have a value placed on time zone coverage, right? And geographic coverage. So it's the first team that has to navigate the loneliness of work as well, of being on your own and being independent. As a team at Gravity Forms, we're all distributed. So we do have an office and we have people that work out of the office, but we are primarily distributed. One question I have for you and maybe Justin or Chris, I don't know who's going to take this one on, but how do you celebrate success? How do you celebrate winning? And how do you create joy, I guess, for lack of a better term, how do you create joy in an environment where often, yeah, you're on your own and your successes, your ability to get through a hard ticket? How does that go?
We try to not vent too much sort of thing. You know, everyone needs an outlet sort of thing, but we try not to, you know, make that become a outlet. But the team, I'm very fortunate that I have a team with a long history and breadth of experience. So they've, nearly all of the team have established working methods that work for not only Gravity Forms and our customers, but as well as for themselves and their own lives sort of thing. And it's important, you know, that I don't mess up that balance. You know, there's priorities of things we've got to do, but, you know, you don't want to mess up the system if it's working for you. But I think that there is definitely a sort of a point where celebrating successes publicly is a great benefit. So the team will regularly during the day post a positive, you know, response from a customer. And, you know, we get negatives, but we get a lot of, you know, very gracious, very polite and you know, beautiful comments from customers. And, you've got to put them out there. You've got to post them. So our support team Slack, which, you know, everyone in the company can see, we don't hide it from anyone else in the company either. It is, you know, full of affirmations pretty much, which sort of help do that. And then there's things we can do ourselves. Like, you know, we meet regularly, we have team meetings, but we try to keep them reasonably breezy, reasonably light. They're not there to bash everyone over the head with you know, numbers or anything. They're to give people a little bit of credit that, you know, we're keeping it together, you know, especially in times of high stress, new releases or, you know, a bug getting out, for example. We're trying to maintain, you know, it's morale, but it is remote morale management. There's no doubt about it.
Chris, you looked like you had something that you wanted to say on this as well.
I was just going to follow up or mimic what Justin said. We drop positive comments 99% of the time into the support team Slack, and that's because we're all visiting all of the support boxes. So I may see a ticket that was closed by someone else, and that was finished by someone else, but then the customer came back and said, this was great, thanks a lot, this is why I pay for my subscription. I've never been more thankful for a developer was a comment that we got yesterday. So we will close that ticket, but we will share that in Slack so that the person who was helping them actually gets that feedback. So we all see the negatives, and you can kind of brush that off. And if there's actionable information there, the customer may give us a rating and we'll review that, you know, a couple times a year, several times a year. But in general, we try to keep the Slack, the positive affirmations, like Justin said.
I think for anybody in any environment, having those customer stories come through that are celebratory or winning, it raises the morale of everyone. One thing I was thinking about as you were talking is, Justin, you mentioned that your channel in Slack is open. So for those of you maybe who aren't familiar with Slack or what it is as a tool, it's instant messaging. You have the ability to have public rooms and private rooms, kind of chat rooms for lack of a better term. So, you know, often you'll have teams that'll have private rooms where they'll hide away and do their thing. And then you'll have other channels that are public and more open where, you know, everybody sort of jumps in and hangs out. There is definitely a dynamic there and a value in sharing both the highs and the lows with the rest of the company so they get an opportunity to empathize as well. How do you navigate that as a team lead, but also as a team, you know, making sure that the changes that get made or ideas that get brought forward are done or presented or carried out in a way that is customer-centric and customer-focused? Because I think, you know, what most people may or may not realize is that any great idea has a very significant impact on the support team. And they're often the ones on the front line of dealing with the consequences, positive or negative, of, you know, feature changes or, you know, marketing strategies or whatever it is. So how do you navigate that world?
Yeah, I mean, I think there you're talking a little bit towards team dynamics between teams. And to a certain degree, I don't think Slack is that much different to working in a, you know, in a corporate office for those that have had that experience. You know, there are certain teams that like to shield themselves away, and their managers will put up a you know, virtual or not, a sort of certain amount of protection around them. That can be, for example, shuttering the product development team away a little bit so they just don't get constantly pestered by, you know, support team or sales team, etc. But you've got to have some level of communication also, or some level of ability to present to the other teams, or else, you know, it feels like you're on an island. And to our point, the support team has to be more open in that way because, one, we need the other departments to help us do our job, and, two, we're the front line. So if you want to know how something went over, you're going to probably hear it from us first, right? You may get a little bit of feedback from beta testers. You may get little feedback, but the rubber hits the road when it goes public. I think, in a certain degree, we try and keep that communication as open as possible so that we can get feedback, so that we have other people coming in. And, you know, we're a small enough organization, I think, where that camaraderie is fairly obvious, even, you know, very quickly once you come into the company. So, you know, we had a specific channel around support for the 2.5 release. And that was mainly where we would post things like, hey, is this right in 2.5, or is this how it's supposed to go? And we would get the engineer coming in and saying, yep, that is that way, and here is why. And if they want to do this the old way, they would have to do this. And that, you know, unbelievably informative for us, because you don't see all those situations coming beforehand. You can't document all those beforehand. So I think, to a certain degree, I don't expect every other team to be wide open, but to a certain degree, we have to be, because we're really just the voice of the customer. We are passing on what the feedback they are giving to the rest of the organization. We are not trying to be a closed shop and stop any of that getting out. It's the direct opposite. We need that voice to be filtered out to the rest of the organization so that they feel informed. And, you know, when they make product or marketing decisions, they're making them from a point of view of, here's the feedback we've got.
I think it's really interesting, because as companies grow, and the natural tendency is to silo, right? Like, as you get teams, you become involved, self-involved, not necessarily out of a, you know, kind of snobbishness or anything like that, but it just becomes so you get consumed with what you're working on and what you're doing. It's interesting to me. I think that support has a really valuable role to play as a bit of a traffic cop almost between the different teams. You get to sort of, and making sure that communication is happening between different teams, because as you have very rightly described, you're the one sitting there dealing with how things go public and how the customer reacts and responds to changes that get made. So you're hearing things likely before other teams are hearing that, whether it's marketing or product or engineering or whatever the case may be. It's an interesting dynamic. Chris, I'm curious, you know, like, how have you seen the role of support change at Gravity Forms over time? Would you say that support is more important now than it was before, or would you say the dynamic has changed? How does that work? And I'm not looking to point fingers or anything like that. It's more just, you know, you're right, Justin, as you were saying, as you grow as an organization, these things are just become a reality. But Chris, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
That's a great question. Support in the beginning, the very beginning, was in the forums, as I mentioned, and the founders were there. Kevin, Carl, and Alex were in the support forums along with me as a customer, and they had a couple other people. One of the developers now was in there as well. So that was support. And as support grew, we kind of became separated from the product team, and we did not have a very formal method of getting information back to them. That changed in the past couple of years, where we've come up with Product Board as a tool that we use to aggregate customer requests for new features. And we brought on a product manager this year as well, who reviews those and creates new features. And we aggregate, you know, they measure the velocity and things like that for how important a feature is, how often requested the feature is. So we play a part there in driving the product forward by providing the customer feedback. We can explain to them that it's not a feature now. We can work around it in this way, or maybe not work around it at all, but it's a great idea, and I'll send this to the product team. So we do that. The other thing that we do, at least with 2.5, what we did is the whole company was involved with support. All of them were in Help Scout and seeing the tickets, seeing what people were running into and the issues they were having, and they would turn around fixes fairly quickly for that. Now, since the dust has kind of settled on 2.5, they don't have to do that as much, but we still have a method for raising a ticket with them when we have an issue that's affecting more than one person and it's something that we consider to be a bug. So we'll pass that information along to the product team. So I think we're more important now in that feedback to the product development team than we were initially when there were seven people.
And I suppose in those early days, the support team were the product team, so you didn't that's have right. very far to go.
It was all the same.
Yeah,
we've had a program in place. We've had a program in place for a good year and a bit now called Customer Time, whereby external department people will come in and sit in on our queues for a handful of hours each quarter. The managers will define sort of a, you know, go and sit. And, you know, although it, you know, can be a little bit daunting at times, the feedback we get internally is wonderful, that they're like, oh, it's so nice, one, to be solving a problem, and two, it's so nice to get a firsthand account of what the issue might be, and that sort of emotional back and forth you get with a customer, you know, that doesn't come out in metrics, it doesn't come out in, you know, problem solved, it comes out in the second or third reply, and the, you know, when you see the frustration turn to gratitude. And I think that's such a valuable feeling that it's hard to bottle, but it's great if, you know, people directly involved in the, you know, in the product teams can get to experience that.
Well, I'm conscious of time, and I think we're quickly running out of it here now. So as a bit of a closing commentary, Justin, I want to throw it back to you, because I think the question that I'm left with at the end is, we've worked hard to get to here. What do we do next? How do you innovate in this space? Or what do you think are some of the next challenges or opportunities for support at Gravity Forms to try to solve?
Yeah, and I imagine my version of this will be different to, you know, the experienced engineers on the ground like Chris sort of thing, who's, you know, view is definitely more personal, more, you know, customer-centric. But departmentally, my challenge is always how to grow the team. Because what we are seeing, I think, especially over the last number of years, and what became very evident in the launch of 2.5 is we have a massively broad level of experience amongst our customers. We have people who, you know, will reach out to try and find out how to, you know, register their license key. And then we have people who have setups unbelievably complicated. And the sheer number of integrations now that you run across, you know, is often where we're debugging, you know, conflicts with other plugins as much as we are dealing with anything to do with Gravity Forms. So being able to insert people into that team dynamic that come with enough experience, we had to hit the ground running, not be, you know, daunted by that, and at the same time be quickly integrate into the what we'll call the personality of the team, it becomes quite important. And it can be quite a difficult thing to do when you are not only operating remotely, but you're also hiring remotely. So I think that's one of the bigger challenges for me, you know, as we grow our team, because our traffic's probably going up 25 to 30% a year, you know, reasonably quickly. So, you know, we have to expand every year and keep the team growing, but not, you know, we're not trying to get to the point of being a 200-person call center. You know, that's sort of not why we're in the business at the moment. So I think that challenge, and additionally, trying to find some other tools that can help smooth around some of our edges, because, you know, we've analyzed the effects of chat ticketing systems. So doing it via chat, and that's something that, you know, we have to do more evaluation on, because we haven't quite found it working as smooth as we would like. But there is a definite role to play in, you get certain amount of depth to, you know, something that goes on. Chris will know them, the what we call the zombie tickets, the tickets that never seem to die, that, you know, every couple of days it's coming back with an additional data point on the ticket, and they go on for, you know, a week more. Those are the type of things where sometimes we can accelerate what we can do there by trying to get more direct communication. So I think there's a tool place to lay here. It's a team dynamic and an expectation from our customers at the moment that we don't try to mess with too much the way it works right now. But there's definitely room to grow, both in personnel who can bring in different experiences for us, and probably in some of the tool sets we're using moving forward.
Wow. Well, let's end there. Thank you so much, both of you, Justin and Chris, for being here and talking about support. I really enjoyed spending some time with you, and I guess we'll see you in the support forums and in the tickets the next time we have something to chat about.
We'll catch you in Slack.
All right.
That's it. All right. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, James.
I think my big takeaway from chatting with Justin and Chris about support is just how valuable a role support plays, not just in the customer-facing side, but in the company-facing side as well. That as your company grows and matures and support matures and grows as well, how they are able to bring the voice of the customer into the decision-making process of your product and engineering teams or your marketing teams becomes exponentially valuable. But I'm curious to hear what you think. What are your thoughts? Please leave a comment. Let us know how you feel about support. Maybe share some of your stories, hopefully positive experiences. But, you know, we've all had those experiences as well that maybe aren't quite the best. I'm curious to hear about it all and hear your thoughts on this episode. As always, we'd love for you to consider subscribing here to this channel at Input. It helps us out because we get to grow and learn about who's hanging out with us, but also because I think this journey is really, really cool. And some of the things we've got coming up are going to be a lot of fun to chat about as well. So with all that said, that's it for this episode of Input. See you next time.